Hello, it's Emily, the host and creator of the Modern Romantic podcast. I just wanted to interrupt really quickly to say thank you so much for your support. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the likes and comments and follows. Thank you for sharing with your friends and family and fellow artists. And your positive reviews on podcast platforms are not lost on us. We see every one. So we appreciate you and thank you again for joining us.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I am tempered by your presence every day, and I'm forged by the love in your eyes. Hi, I'm Trey. And I'm joined by the current glaring co-host of mine, Emily. Hi, Emily.
You're so good at the cheese. Hi, I'm Emily, and I'm fortified with iron.
Yes. So with these puns, I think you can quite guess who our guest tonight is going to be. But Emily, will you please introduce our fantastic guest this evening?
I would be delighted. Oh, we are delighted to introduce our remarkable guest tonight, Lisa Elias. Lisa is a blacksmith artist who has been fortunate enough to do what she loves, and that is make incredible art with metal. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yay.
Woohoo, woohoo.
Confetti.
I could bang my hammers around.
Those may not work as confetti, unless you're wearing a hard hat, though.
Right.
I've got the headset on.
Oh, yeah.
I can't hear anything.
So,
thank
Lisa.
You, sorry.
Oh, Lisa, I read that you have been blacksmithing for a little over 20 years at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd probably say 25, 28, which ages me forever. So, yeah.
Oh. So I do have to ask, how did you get started with blacksmithing?
You know, I was one of those wandering college kids and trying to figure out what to do. I was always doing art as a young kid in my family. That's what we did for activities, was just draw like everyone else. In college, I was an illustrator and studying more design work and found glass. So I was actually a glass blower before I ever picked up a hammer. So for many, many years, I was combining metal and glass and just kind of put my glass pipes up to the corner of the studio and thought, you know what, metal's where it's at. This is what I can do. So I've just really figured it out. I pretty much self-taught myself a lot of, you know, basically I taught myself how to weld, for God's sake. So,
that's and I don't amazing.
Also, yeah. but also not that I identify as a blacksmith, but I really do call myself more of an artist and a fabricator that uses blacksmithing techniques. So there you go.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, blacksmith does lend itself to other types of smithing or other types of metalwork that we're used to hearing alongside blacksmithing. So
yeah, sure.
Like knife making and things like that. So,
yeah.
I was going to ask because Kaz in our chat here was asking when we were talking about how did you get started. She said, please say Renfair. Please say you got started at Renfair.
No, not at all.
So it does beg the question, have you ever made any swords before?
Funny you ask. I was a visiting artist, or I guess I taught actually St. Cloud State University for a summer during a summer program. And all of my students, I think I had like 10 students and the majority of them were male and they wanted to make swords. And I've never made a sword, but I was like, well, I can kind of teach how to do some cool rivets when we make some weapons. I mean, it was, yeah, I wouldn't say it's anything that I would go after again, but that's what the students wanted to do. And so yeah, I kind of made it up.
That's awesome. Yeah, Kaz said you're still amazing.
Yay, okay.
So I'm so sorry. I will save my question. Go ahead, Emily.
No, go.
So since that you say that you're more of an artist that employs blacksmithing techniques, how do you think that kind of separates you from like a standard blacksmith? Or how do you think that maybe benefits you for what you create?
Oh, gal. Okay. How do I explain this? Yes, I use an anvil. I use hammers. I use a power hammer, but I do not forge weld. Forge welding is really a traditional blacksmithing technique to hold two, blend two pieces of metal together. I don't have the patience for that. I have the utmost respect for blacksmiths and metal artists that do use that technique, but that was just something. It's just like, oh, we have a welder. We have these tools that you could do it so much easier and so much faster. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of resonates to me. And so did I answer the question?
Yeah. I would kind of like to follow that up and ask, what are some things that you think that you do really well that blacksmiths could learn from you?
Ooh. Oof. I don't know. I've got nothing. I don't know. I mean, I'm always surprised that, I've been a demonstrator a few times at blacksmithing conferences, mm-hmm. and I have to say, I just don't really know where I fit into that realm, because I do find myself as more of a fabricator in that world. And a lot of real traditional blacksmiths, they would probably look at my work and like, ah, that's not blacksmithing. That's a cut piece of metal. You didn't make that leaf. You cut it out with a plasma cutter or something. But I don't always feel like things need to be so difficult, so hard. You know, you don't need to hand make your tool. Why not go buy a hammer, you know, that someone else made for you? Because a lot of blacksmiths also use all of, you know, they're very into tooling, and mm-hmm. I'm not, right. You know, I have very few hammers, as you can see behind me, and my shop is pretty bare bones.
Very few hammers. That's like me saying I only have very few scissors, Trey.
Right.
I have as many scissors as you have hammers hanging there.
Well, I would say that I'd say the creativity or the willingness to adjust. There's always that like set principle and set practices, no matter what the art form is, that people say, oh, well, this is the rule of this. I think that you saying that, why not look for, you know, something that's a little bit more time safely, or a way to do this that, you know, kind of bucks certain transition or traditions. I promise I can speak English. My goodness. Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely true. I mean, because when I was in college, I didn't know how to weld. So what did I do? I went and bought, you know, what is it called when you glue? There's a type of glue that I think it's called JB Weld. So oh, yeah. I would weld two pieces of metal because I didn't know how to weld. So, you know, that worked.
Sure.
Yeah. Until it didn't.
Right. And you mentioned glass earlier. I've gotten into glass fusion recently. Mm-hmm. And one thing I learned, one thing you learn right away is that not all glass can stick to other glass the same way. Or be fired in a kiln the same. So did you said that you're kind of self-taught. Did you have to go through those motions with metal too and go, oh, well, I can't just weld aluminum to steel or whatever. I don't know what metals work, but.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of trial and error. You blow through things. Definitely. Yep.
Do you prefer to work with a certain type of metal?
Mild steel, primarily. Okay. Hot rolled mild steel. I've also done a lot of iron pours. Iron is a completely different way of, you know, like forming iron or doing more sculptural work with casting iron. So I've certainly have dabbled with that in the past.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So my iron thing was actually all right.
That's right. Yes, I'm probably iron deficient because I don't eat meat.
Maybe if you touch iron enough, you'll still absorb some of it.
Right. Very true.
Like they say, cooking in cast iron gives you more iron.
Yep. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because some of it gets into your food. Like, I don't know, cook a pancake in a cast iron skillet and you'll get iron. It's like trace amounts, but it'll boost your iron.
Okay, that's the first time I've ever heard that, and I love that. Seth, let's go buy a cast iron pan. Cool.
Also, don't if you have a glass top stove, you don't want to mm-hmm. slide that cast iron pan across it, so be very careful.
I was warned about that from my mother consistently whenever she got it. She's like, this is my cast iron pan. She basically became Gollum and was like, my precious. As far as like creations and things, thinking through that like creative lens, what was looking at your first piece that you ever made as an artist with blacksmithing techniques, how does that compare to what you have done now?
Oh, goodness. I hope I'm a hell of a lot better at trying to figure things out. I guess I have to kind of refer back to college. I mean, I pretty much spent about 8 years in college just to use the art department. Because when was I ever going to have such a great studio, right? And so I just, you know, I did casted concrete, you know, pâte de verre, which is a type of glass, and metalwork. So I just kind of combine all these pieces together, thinking I was just, you know, creating something really beautifully wonderful, combining way too many materials. So, you know, just really kind of honing in on your skill. And so I've learned a lot through the years. 28 years will do that to you.
Yeah. Do you find that, like, you do this professionally, so it is not just a passion, it is your living, correct?
This is definitely my living. Okay. It's been my living for the last 28 years, honestly. I was a waitress and a server for a little while until I got fired, and that's where I was just like, you know what? I can make, you know, two toilet paper holders in a day and a couple of towel racks and make just as much money as I would in a weekend waitressing. So that was pretty much how I became a self-employed artist. Just like, I don't need to have a lot of money. I just need to survive. And so, yeah, I've been very lucky, but damn, is it a lot of work. I mean, I can't say it's been an easy road by any means, but, you know, you just keep pushing.
Sure. One question that we have from the chat is, what is fabrication? So what does that mean in blacksmithing terms, or in what, the way you do it, or at least?
Of course I make up words all the time. So I probably made up that.
That's great. I love it.
Fabrication. You know, for me, it's just like welding two pieces together, you know, sheet metal, round rods. I just, you know, as a fabricator, I guess a fabricator could be someone who, you know, builds walls too, for all I know, but
someone who creates, you know.
yeah fabricate,
make something from bits and pieces. Do you, what are some things that you made, maybe not for a client but for yourself?
The essentials, curtain rods, back in the day when everyone used curtain rods. Not a lot. I mean, I shouldn't say a lot, but very, very few things. I don't like to have my work around me I love what I do. I love, you know, I think I make some nice pieces, mm-hmm. but I certainly don't want to sit and gaze across the room and look at a, you know, a lamp that I made. Although I do have a couple of lamps in my house, so never mind.
I was like, really? You don't want to look at your own?
All right, never mind.
It's kind of like, what is it? The cobbler doesn't have any shoes. And I thought about that.
Yep. True.
Like you have to have a couple of things. Go ahead, Trace.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, Emily, is there anything that you have made that you just like put in a closet and you're like, nope, never gonna look at that again?
I mean, yeah, those things exist. I have that box of things. But I mean, if we're talking about costuming, if I don't, there are only a couple pieces I didn't finish for whatever reason, but most things either become something else or I finish them or redo them until they're right. As far as photography goes, yeah, that garbage bag, digital garbage bag, has got plenty. But I don't
I
think
have,
I, oh, I'm sorry.
sorry, no, I was going to say, I sometimes have garage sales. I mean,
Oh.
just put your old work out and just say, ah, sale, garage sale.
I've done
I love
that, like
that.
sample
So
sale.
sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
Yeah.
As far as my art around here, though, no, I'd actually love, because I love what I do. Like, I do photography, more like epic art type photography. So I would love the pieces that I love the most, I do want to surround myself with, not because I necessarily created them, but they're like part of what my vision for my world is. So, yes, I want those around me. So, I guess, I mean, we all see it differently, though. So, what about you, Trey?
Most of the things for me that get filmed are like concerts, performances, those sorts of things. And yeah, those DVDs are locked away in a safe where no one will see them and they will never see the light of day again.
Oh, dear Seth.
Seth doesn't know the combination.
Oh, man. Okay. Did you make the lamp that's behind you, Lisa?
Yes, I actually, it's a collaboration. My son is a potter.
Oh, cool.
And so he made the ceramic shade. I guess I'll call it a shade.
Sure.
But actually, the piece is it's about 7 feet tall. So
Yeah.
it's a big one. But yeah, my son, he and I have more recently started collaborating.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah. Yeah, back in the day when I was in college, I used to blow glass shades and then combine the metal. So
Okay. That's
kind of bring me
awesome.
back.
Yeah. I go to the art lab in Sauk Center often enough, and we're always looking at ways to combine like pottery with glass fusion or different art forms to see if we can like elevate it somehow or like how can we combine these two arts? So that's yeah, I expect that from creative minds, I guess, to some degree, because of course, if you have your son there who has his own skills and you can bond over those things and make awesomeness happen.
And make money.
Yes.
Yes.
Sometimes that's the awesomeness that happens. Yeah. Do you have any specific like rituals or certain practices that you make sure you have like to tap into your artistic inspiration or to like get started? Like, do you have to have all your hammers in a certain order or anything like that?
That's kind of funny. Not that my hammers need to be in a certain order, but I like cleanliness. I like my floor to be cleaned. I don't like clutter. I don't like mess, because I'm just in such a messy environment all the time, breathing messy air. So I like it to be very neat and tidy.
Yeah.
And
That helps.
loud music. I like to listen to loud music when I work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not when I draw. When I draw, it needs to be kind of a little bit more calmer space.
So designing is like a different headspace than actually
Yep,
building.
100%. Yeah, I do all my designing at home on the dining room table, and I have a hard time designing here. I just think I need a big table just to kind of get my ideas going.
Sure.
Yeah.
You have a couple of people in the chat that seem to know you or know who
Oh
you are.
gosh. Oh.
Emmett McGarity said, "Hi there, Lisa. It's a real treat to see you talk about your art.
Oh.
Thanks to the podcaster for hosting, Emmett and Rebecca."
Oh, thank you, Emmett and Rebecca, for tuning in.
Yeah. And Stacy said, "I have a few of Lisa's pieces and love them."
Oh, Stacy, who? Wait, Stacy.
Den Kolbisch.
Oh, I can see it. Oh, yes, my neighbor, Stacy.
My neighbor, Stacy.
And I love her.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you have, like, specific, do you do mostly custom work, or do you create for someone to purchase, like, do you just design something and people buy it? Or how does that work mostly for you?
I primarily write, more recently, I've been doing a lot more public art that is in public spaces, on the street, and, you know, parkland.
Yeah.
That really has been kind of my focus for the last 7 years. But I also host a couple of events during the year, one in May where, you know, I do a lot of smaller things that people can pick up and buy. And of course, holiday things, you know, kind of bread and butter.
Sure.
And I do a lot of commissions of gates and railings and lighting. But, you know, I have to kind of pick and choose what I can do throughout the year. But I, you know, today I had a woman who, oh, I don't even want to talk about it. So never mind. I don't do repair jobs. You know, someone's like, oh, I have this piece that, could you alter it? Can you repair it? And it's just like, yeah, no. So,
that's annoying. Yes.
I do all my own design work because I don't want to do other people's work. And when I do get asked to do commissions, you know, I really also refer people to my website and want to make sure that my style is really what they're looking for, because, you know, that's what I do best and that's what I want to do.
Yeah. And that matters. That keeps you happy.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So with that being said, Lisa, how would you describe your style artistically?
Oh, goodness. Pretty. Just super pretty. It is. Graceful. Graceful. Pretty. Art Nouveau, of course, everyone says, oh, you know, Art Nouveau, which is, of course, true.
Yeah.
How would you describe my work?
I was not expecting this question to be flipped around.
I would say for metal, it appears dainty, and I love that about it. That's like a cool juxtaposition of this, like, hard, you know, steel, I suppose, and this dainty little tiny little wispy scroll work, or I don't know what you call it, but I love that about your work.
And I really like layering. I mean, I'm more like building up pieces of small dainty pieces of metal to, you know, to kind of make more of a mass,
kind of like the lamp behind you,
kind of like yeah that's kind of dainty. The piece to the right, though, you guys can't see it. It's this massive piece that I'm doing for a public space in North Carolina that I'm just starting. So it's going to have lots of ivy leaves kind of falling from it.
Neat.
But it's a 12-foot. I mean, it's huge. It's 12 feet by 12 feet, and it's very heavy. It's in two parts.
So, do you go to the location then and set it all up yourself?
I'll have to hire someone. So it will be trucked to North Carolina and then installed by someone that's certified to do installations down there.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that one.
Me too.
Trey, you'll probably get to see it before me.
Yes.
Well, depending on when it's done.
That's true. But Lisa, I have an answer to your question. I would say it is graceful. Your work is graceful. For me, a lot of your pieces, when I look at metal, I typically think of very angular sort of lines, and a lot of your work is curved, or it follows like the natural flow of nature. A lot of curves, a lot of bends and things that you don't typically see with items associated with metal. So for me, it's very graceful.
Yeah, spot on. Good answer.
Gold star, Trey.
Ding. Where do you draw? You've mentioned Art Nouveau, but I do want to ask, where do you get some of the inspiration for your pieces?
Well, nature, of course. Just kind of walking around, looking at lines. I know that's very vague, but that's all I got.
So, like, in your journey, because you've done this a while now, so you're pretty practiced and you're pretty set on, like, what works and what doesn't. What are some of the creative obstacles you've tackled successfully?
Gosh, that's every job is tackling something to make sure it stands. I mean, especially with public art, of course, because you have a lot of obstacles. Is it ADA, you know, making drinking fountains? Is it ADA compliant? Does it have pointy edges? Does it function? Those are massive obstacles. Is it going to work?
Right.
Is it going to stand up?
Yeah, I imagine every job would be its own unique situation.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
So you have this project you're working on for the public art. Do you have other current projects you can talk about?
Yeah, actually, I got two of them down in North Carolina that I'm doing. One is for an apartment complex, and the other is for a historical cemetery site where I'm doing an exit and an entrance. And it's not like your typical gate. These are just kind of, you know, an entrance and an exit. And so it's going to be kind of more monumental pieces at, you know, it's going to be blocks. These components are going to be blocks away. That one will be built out of Corten steel. And Corten is a self-weathering steel that turns rust and doesn't rust through completely, so you don't have to worry about galvanizing or painting. So that's a different application. And what other projects am I working on? I got a couple of smaller sales coming up, so I've really got to hone in and focus on making some quick cash.
Sure. If we wanted to find your art to purchase it ourselves, is that possible for us or our audience to do that?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. And actually, people come through my studio all the time. Okay. You know, email and say, hey, it's our anniversary. 11 years is steel. I think so. I think cool. I thought it was actually six, you know, and your sixth anniversary, but who knows? It should be every year, right?
Right.
Metal every day. Every year.
Metal every day.
Yeah.
That's our new motto. Whether it's music or works by Lisa Elias, it's metal every day.
I like that. That works.
And you were correct, Lisa. It is the 11-year anniversary. That is.
Oh, it is. Wow, you're fast. Jesus.
Now no one has an excuse to miss that.
Right.
Nope.
Yep. Lisa Elias's door is always open.
Okay. The new 11 line by Lisa Elias.
Right. It goes to 11.
Okay.
Funny.
I love it.
Right. Lisa's clearly worked in marketing. Emily, get out of my brain, because that's exactly what my brain was going for. Lisa, I am kind of curious. You mentioned before that you really like working with a particular kind of metal. I am kind of interested in the different colors that can come out of different metals. How do you get all those color variations that we might see on like a statue or a piece of artwork? Are there different techniques that kind of get those color variations?
Oh, well, totally. I mean, it depends on what the material is. I mean, obviously you can paint a surface. You can paint metal, by either using a powder coating technique or just straight up, you know, car paint, for crying out loud. Corten, I talked about that self-weathering steel. You don't really do anything except let it rust, and that kind of turns a really lustrous, velvety, golden brown, you know, rusty brown. You know, if you're using bronze, obvious, I think you can, I don't do a lot of bronze work, but you know, you can leave it out to galvan or to patina to, you know, kind of a greenish tint, but, you know, that's all what the weather is, or, you know, it's a weathering thing. So, did I answer it?
Archer in our chat was asking, color case hardening or flame coloring?
Well, flame coloring would probably be if you're using maybe copper or maybe stainless steel. I primarily, like when I do interior work, I don't do any painting. I will, after I'm done fabricating something, and, you know, a lot of it is hand hammered or forged, you know, thrown through my forge and then my power hammer. So it's got like some variation in that texture and the material itself. And so when you're done making something, or when I'm done making something, I would grind it down with a, you know, like a brush wheel of a handheld grinder. And then I would put a wax coat over it, and I would use this, you know, this wax coat kind of hardens it and also just lets all the beautiful variations of steel come through. But it's, you know, it's all going to be kind of black, gray, grayish tones. Not like anything super shiny, because I'm not using stainless steel. So hopefully I asked or answered that question for him.
I think so.
Yeah. So just a natural wax is really what I think works best for my work, because it is, you know, very organic, and I want it to feel natural.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I think you've achieved that for sure, because it does.
Yeah. Thanks.
We have more fan mail for you coming in. This one coming from Diane Dawn.
Diane.
She said, whenever I visit relatives in Italy, I bring them a piece of Lisa's.
Oh, it's true. She's a great friend and a very, she's great. So thanks, Diane.
Yay. I love that you have an awesome support system here tonight. That's great.
I've got some good people around me for sure. Yep.
What is part of the design and creation process that you get the most excited about?
Getting the job.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get a larger piece, you know, and they may say in the request for qualifications, like, oh, for this proposal, like maybe it's going to have a lighting incorporated into it. And just like, I've got tons of ideas. So, you know, just kind of really digging through words. I actually will Google words and just try to like think, how can I see an image that makes sense for me, and kind of go with that. Like recently I did a piece for Anoka Ramsey Community College here in Minnesota, and it was a piece to be installed in the nursing and business school. And so they wanted something that wasn't like going to say work. I mean, like, how can you interpret nursing like a public art job? And so I was like, oh, okay, well, nursing, what a stressful job. College, what a stressful time that is for people. So, you know, stress was just kind of like coming at me. And so I created a wall piece that was of these flowing lavender leaves and just kind of blowing gently. And the wall was, I mean, it was a very large piece. The wall was about 16 feet by 9 feet. And so it was me trying to create something that made sense for this space, for this school. And so lavender, because of its medicinal qualities and the scent, of course, it's calming. And besides that, it's dang beautiful. So that was, you know, just kind of researching what seems to make sense. And of course, some days I have horrible drawing days and design days that I just have to leave and then go to the studio and make a trivet. You know, something easy. Oh, for God's sakes, I can't do this anymore. So
I've been there. I've...
Yeah. Same.
For anyone who's listening that's been following on the Ren Fair costume journey, yeah, I've definitely had days like that.
Well, did you start? Well, actually, I don't know this about you either, Trey. Or at least if we've talked about it, I don't remember. And that is, like, for myself, I never considered myself someone who could draw. That's my dad and my sisters. They're good at that. For some reason, that, like, skipped me. So I've worked hard at sketching. I have a bunch of colored pencils and paper. And I've worked really hard at sketching so that I could draw, like, dress designs so that they look like human beings wearing clothing. Because otherwise, like, I'm a stick person kind of girl, you know, just... And so I'm wondering, this is a question for both of you, actually. Did you have to work at drawing to design, or was that something you were already kind of good at?
Trey?
For certain things, I had to really work at it. Like, I still, to this day, cannot get faces correct. They all kind of come out looking like a Pablo Picasso, like, cubism style.
Awesome.
But when it comes to things like flowers, I really got good at drawing irises, and I got really good at drawing lilies. And weirdly enough, I can draw hands with, like, a scary amount of detail. But when it comes to, like, it's kind of insane. But for other things, it takes a while. Yeah.
Well, for costuming, though, like, to design a garb.
Oh. Yeah, no, still can't draw that stuff to save my life.
You can draw a hand with intense detail, but not a costume.
Seriously.
Wow.
Like, I will literally almost trace it, whatever I'm, like, designing. So if it's a pattern for something, I will almost, like, devoid the picture of all color and all, like, whatever, and just leave the outline of it, and I've essentially traced it, but that way I can start going in with my level of detail that I want and put it over top of that.
Okay, that's valid. I mean, it's all valid. I just thought I'd ask. All right, Lisa, your turn.
Oh, God. We drew all the time as a family. Okay. You know, I'm the youngest of nine, like I think I told you, and so there was just a lot of sitting around the table with a pad of paper and coloring books and constantly drawing and drawing. And most of my family are artists. And so, you know, painters, my one sister, Mary, who recently passed, she was an amazing, she could do portraits like every, you know, just like sit down and watch a band and have a, you know, a portrait of them already completed by the end of their show. But one of the funny things as a kid, I just remembered about this. We have a family room up, you know, that my father built. We lived in a small little rambler, and Dad built this family room that my mom would, rather than wallpaper or paint, she literally wallpapered all of our drawings and our hands on the wall.
Cool.
So it was, yeah, it was kind of crazy. But yeah, it had to go away because moths were, you know, like when you use not decoupage, but, you know, like flour to put the glue. Yeah. The flour in the water. So bugs would lay eggs. So that place had to get torn down, or the wall did. So, yeah.
So it was a good idea at the time. That's really a neat idea though.
Yeah. That was great. So anyways, yeah, drawing was definitely always part of my life. And then of course in school, just always taking art classes that involved illustration illustration.
Okay.
So yeah.
So yeah, she can draw, Trey.
Yeah.
I can draw. Well, it's very helpful. I mean, I need to tell people, you know, like to show a client or do proposals of, you know, I hand draw everything. I don't use CAD drawing. Sure. So that's, you know, it's either a curse or a benefit, but that's just how my brain works. I have to do everything by hand.
Yeah. That's how I do it.
Yeah.
Out of all of the pieces that you've made, do you have any favorites?
About a year ago, I installed a piece outside of an apartment complex in Minnesota that was made up of three large rings that incorporated lighting and a drinking fountain and a bench. And the apartment complex, it's called the Bower in Edina. And the Bower is like a, you know, a garden sacred space, or you, you know, you're kind of walking into this trellis enchanting area. And so I kind of wanted to create something like that in front of this building. So I'm pretty proud of it. It was a pretty complicated piece. I mean, actually really, really complicated. I mean, it had these three large rings that were kind of trellises and, you know, like 12 feet high, 12 feet wide, and, you know, with these floral elements underneath it, and just trying to really make sure that I was staying true to what I wanted this piece to, you know, have it kind of like the secret space. I was pretty proud that I pulled it off. It works, except the drinking fountain didn't work for about a year, and now it's back on. So that was a bummer.
Yeah.
That was a big bummer.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I actually was trying to find that. Find a picture of it. So if any of our guests happen to have a link to that, I would love to see it because it sounds incredible.
I think, well, it's on my website, and unless maybe I'm probably explaining it pretty bad. you know, in my mind, it's amazing.
It is under yeah. On her website, it's under the outdoor heading, and it is like the second picture over. It's the lighting is kind of a purple, and it's these
magenta
rings with flowers inside of them, and you can kind of see the bench, but you can see the drinking fountain.
Oh, okay. I love this.
Yeah. It's the photo we did as the background to the promo for this.
Oh, yeah, episode. Yeah. My head was, within the rings.
Yeah.
Okay. I like this.
That's really cool. I bet it looks awesome when there's all snow on the ground, too, because in this picture, there's a little snow, but like when it's all snow with the purple light, I think that would look really cool.
Yeah. No, that was a big piece.
Neat. Yeah.
That was a lot of engineering. A lot of engineering went into that.
Right. So what is that? Is that like bolted to the ground somehow? Or is it because it's not actually underground?
It's actually, no, it is. It's bolted underneath. Yep. And then they put pavers on top of it.
Okay.
So it's probably about 12, probably a foot in ground.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. And that installation, that happened like, oh God, I'm always installing a job when it's like just freaking cold outside. And,
right now when it's nice and warm.
The snow is about to happen and we're out there for hours just like, okay, it's going to work.
Like it's Minnesota. We don't care if it snows.
It's always supposed to happen in the summer, but it never does. So
right.
I'm always installing in the winter.
True. With some of your pieces, being that they're like public art and things, have you built a relationship with any particular company or installation team, or does it vary with each job?
Definitely varies with each job. With public art, a lot of times you are applying along with, you know, 20 to 100 more other people that are trying to get the same job. And so every city, every, you know, arts organization or a lot of buildings like you know, more, these apart, like the Bower, the building, I think most projects have to have some percentage going towards public art. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of competition for those. I don't get them all.
But still, the ones that you have had are incredible. Like, I love the work that I've seen so far.
Thank you.
I think you should win an award for this, the stop sign post.
Oh my God. Yes. Why? What kind of award should I get?
That's the coolest stop sign ever.
Well, it wasn't just one. I did about 250 of them.
What?
Oh, wow. That's also under outdoor on our website.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's I don't think anyone sign. Realizes. Yeah.
Oh, so I didn't realize there were that many. Okay, the coolest collection of stop signs ever. Those are so neat. I would live in that neighborhood. Well, maybe. I don't know. But want to.
I mean, actually, the way that job happened, though, was I worked with Public Art St. Paul and the city of St. Paul, and they had a team of myself and two other people. So we were a team of whenever they were reconstructing streets, if they were putting in new sidewalks or rain gardens, you know, widening the streets or putting in different curbs, that a percentage of those funds would go towards public art. And so every neighborhood had a different amount of money. And being on this committee, we were kind of stuck, like, well, what kind of work can you do in the right of way of traffic? You know, you were working in basically like sweet little neighborhoods, but you couldn't do anything on busier streets because of someone's going to hit it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of obstacles of what could happen with public works and what, as an artist, what can you do? So one of the things we looked at was just, you know, kind of walking through these neighborhoods, just like, you know, there are stop signs everywhere. These posts are crooked. They look like shit. And why not try to make a sign have something interesting to hold it up? So that's kind of where the stop sign happened. And yeah, I did 250 of those. And then also some no parking signs.
So, oh,
yes.
That is such a cool way. You know, I would never have maybe thought to take just the crappy T-post or whatever they put stop signs on and turn that into art instead. That's such a cool place to put art intentionally.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we look at it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really awesome. Although, did you Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say every one was handmade. I mean, this was me making every single one. So it was a big to-do.
Was it tedious? Did you get tired of it?
I wouldn't say. I kind of got empowered by it, honestly. It's just like, oh, okay, one down. Only, you know, well, every neighbor, like, I didn't do 250 all at once. I, you know, like maybe 8 months would go by and I would get another job with a different neighborhood, or, you know, a year would go by. But, you know, like, I think there was one neighborhood where I probably had about 60 of them. And I mean, it kind of came down to, it's just like, okay, I got one down and, you know, 59 to go, and I got two down. And I mean, it kind of became a game, and I really enjoyed it because I work by myself all the time and I talk to myself out loud all the time. And so I was just like, all right, I got 50 down and only 10 more to go. I mean, I'm not bored. I am so happy. You know?
That's the way to do it.
You know, but of course you're swearing inside, just like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure people drove through those neighborhoods and went, oh, that's so cool. How do we get that?
Oh,
and then now you've got.
Or people say, what the hell? Why would anyone spend money on this?
Well, those.
I mean, that's true, too.
Those that people happens. Can just go. I'm sorry. Spend money on that. Like, no, this is what art is about.
Yep.
I feel like there was a point in my life and where I live near Chicago. And all of the buildings, instead of being these cool old architectural feats and having architectural interest, all of a sudden, all the new buildings going up were just boxes. And I started to think, like, I don't like where we're going architecturally, and I don't like this. I don't want to live here. This is boring. And I remember visiting Minneapolis, and I remember visiting Charlotte, North Carolina, and thinking that Charlotte is, like, they have these details in the buildings that, like, I didn't see in Chicago. And even some of Minneapolis had art in places. Like, that's what makes the life around you interesting. And that's what makes your world. So, yeah, okay, who's going to spend money on this? This is your world. This is your surroundings. Yeah. So if you want just plain boxes because you don't want to spend the money, then go live in that world. There's plenty of them in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Then, not that Chicago is devoid of art, but I would rather have a stop sign post like this one. Yeah, spend that.
Yay, money. Thanks.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. I'm just going to go write a grant to have more of these put into Charlotte.
Yeah, specifically your neighborhood, right?
Have one at just like every post and be like, yep, I commissioned that one and that one and that one. And that.
I'll have all the signs in my yard just so that I can have all this art.
Lisa, is there, like, thinking of projects that are still to come, if money were no object, if you had all the time in the world, who would you want to come to you and say, I want to commission you to create a piece? Who would that person be? Or what would that counsel be that came to you?
Oh my God, I don't know. Wait, all the money in the world? Is that what you said?
Yeah, they're giving you unlimited funds. No matter what you need, they will pay for it.
Oh gosh, that's a hard one. I mean, I feel like I'm living the, I mean, not living the dream, because yeah, it's hard work for sure. You got me. I mean, I don't really know where I would even begin to think that. Maybe a celebrity? I don't know.
Sure, why not?
I would say if there was all the money in the world, what types of metals would you buy more of?
You know what? I really do work with mild steel, hot rolled steel. Wants, I don't, yeah. I mean, that's how I know the material. I know how to use it. So it does what it needs to do for me.
I think Diane said here, and I'm gonna second this one.
Oh God,
George Clooney.
Of course.
Yeah, if you answered your phone and it was George Clooney on the other end, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no thanks. No.
Take a hike, George.
Yeah, of course. Come on, George Clooney. Whatever. That's funny.
Mr. Clooney, you can call me George. So George Clooney calls you and he wants you to just use your own creativity to make whatever you want for him, and money is no object.
What would that be?
Yeah, sure. Oh. Why not?
Oh, good Lord.
You'd probably have to think about that a while. I feel like 100%. That really requires a lot of thought.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm not a spot. Yeah, I'm a slow thinker.
I'm going to process that one. Mm-hmm. I think George would appreciate it if you did put some good thought into it. George Clooney, if you're listening.
Although, which home? I mean, is this is probably the one that his home on Lake Como. Right, Diane?
I love that you know Sorry. This.
Well, I was just in Italy, but and Lake Como, so
perfect for his 11th anniversary. This is perfect. Lord. I think we need to. She said, "Duh, Lisa."
She's funny.
I love her, Diane. You're great. You should.
You should have her as a guest. Yeah. She's super romantic. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Cut that out.
Diane's like, oh, that was great. I love that. George, if you're listening, my email is emily@themodrom.com, and we'll put you in touch with Lisa.
Mm-hmm. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can always email us at please sponsor us. We love you at themodrom.com. Yes, that is a real email.
Or Lisa needs new work boots.
Oh, yeah. Lisa needs new work boots at themodrom.com. Oh, now I have to make that email. I'm going to go do that right now.
Yes.
Right in the middle of the show. We're going to make a new email just for Lisa. Lisa needs new work boots. Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you, Diane, for that. I appreciate that. What a wonderful friend.
Yep. The best.
You mentioned that you might have some works currently going on that you'd like to talk about. What are some upcoming projects that we can look forward to?
Well, was I telling you about the project in, well, two of them in North Carolina, the large, it's like this big, oh gosh, half moon shape that's going to extend about 12 feet high. Mm-hmm. And it's for an apartment complex that's going to be called the Ivy or Alta Ivy. God, I should get this down. So, I mean, obviously it's going to have some loose ivy vine component streaming or gently falling from it, and it will have lighting, and I really thought the lighting would be kind of interesting to have kind of some blue hues, but they kind of nixed that idea, and we're just going to do some basic white lighting incorporated shining up and down. So that's one fun one. So yeah,
I like the lighting idea.
I really love lighting. It's important. There's some awful lighting out there.
Yes. Well, I was kind of curious because you've talked about how you've done the metal. Your son is like looking at the lamp specifically behind you. You did the metal component. Your son worked on the lamp shade. Who works on the electrical wiring to kind of connect all those pieces together?
Well, that would be my husband, of course.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, I do figure out some of the lighting, but I'm not UL list. I mean, I use UL listed components, but if I'm doing something for a restaurant or a public space, I will hire that out to an electrician. I mean, I have to. I don't want to have that liability, of course.
Don't. I do not know.
No.
Yeah, that's not the phone call you want.
Yep. But generally, it's my husband. It's a family affair around here.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
You need to work with everybody, your son and your husband. And
yep.
So you talked about shows coming up, or at least a show. Tell us when and where that is.
Oh, I have a couple of shows. One's a smaller show at a space I do every year. It's in South Minneapolis.
Okay.
It's called 60 Artists on 50th Street.
Ah.
And it's basically on 50th and Bryant. It's a really great one-day show. They have just a variety of really high-caliber artists. And then the following weekend, I've got to get my shit together. And my studio will be open for the full weekend. For a open studio event that's happening in Northeast Minneapolis. So there's going to be a lot of different buildings that are open to the public. And of course, I have a little space, a standalone building where I do all my work. And my son, more recently, after graduating from college, has moved in doing his pottery. So he will be showing his work as well as I.
Awesome.
So,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
So if you need to buy a ticket to Minneapolis, you should do so right away.
Exactly. Yep.
You can get over here and check out Lisa's art and buy it all up.
Buy it all up. Oliver. You got to buy Oliver's work. The potter.
Yes, that's your son.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
And if you would like to donate, we would like to announce that we have a new email. Lisa needs new work boots at themodrom.com.
I love it.
we'll forward any
Red Wings
to you.
We will, of course, forward it to you. Lisa, to make sure that our listening audience can connect with you and stay up to date with a lot of your installations and your work, how might our listening audience be able to do that?
Well, I just started Instagram. I'm really new to this techie stuff. And they can find me, gosh, I think, oh, Lord, you asked me the wrong questions. I think it's Lisa Elias, right? I mean, search me, Lisa Elias.
Yes, on Instagram, it's Lisa Elias Metal.
Yeah, thank you. And then my website is lisaeliasmetalstudio.com. And how else? I could, yeah, I guess that's it. I was going to try to figure out something that was funny and savvy, but nothing.
I was really hoping you were going to say carrier pigeon. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, that too. You know, I'm very, I just bought a cell phone like 2 years in. So this whole tech shit is totally up my alley.
I see that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you dove in anyway, so we can see
your totally dove work. In.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On Lisa's website under contact, there are some other ways to get a hold of you. So if anybody out there wants a custom piece or something awesome, or just to donate to your work boot fund, there's that as well.
I should call it a vacation fund. Now I need a vacation.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think people would feel good about donating to that.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, Lisa. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. That it's too. No. I was gonna say. Okay. I'm gonna go to Italy with Diane.
It's the Lisa stalking George Clooney fund.
Yeah.
With Diane.
You get to Italy, and George just doesn't lower the blinds. He just goes, "Well, let me just open the blinds. Hello, Lisa. Welcome to my villa."
I'm here.
Well, Lisa, we have had such a blast this last hour. We've learned a lot. You have shared so many wonderful things about the artistry of really what you do with metal and the incredible creative artwork that you do. It is not just functional. It is also beautiful to look at. And I cannot wait to see this installation in North Carolina so that I can go visit it in person. I'm so excited.
Yay.
I'll have to come just for that.
Oh, yeah. Please. But looking forward to that. As we wrap up this episode here today, it was such a pleasure to have you on. This episode, along with probably every episode, always will be in memory of Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, passionate encourager, and greatly missed friend. Find us pretty much wherever you tune into podcasts. For updates, announcements, and more, please follow us on social media under Modern Romantic. Thank you, everybody. And I hope you forge whatever day you're going to have with iron, a tempered steel, and a good book.
Oh,
so well said.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for coming. Have a great night, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, Emily, I cannot believe this incredible chocolate we've been tasting. Ugh, we had to bring Eric and Jaleesa from Storyboard Delights back to discuss.
Absolutely we did. What is it about your chocolate that makes it so magical?
Ooh, it's magical because we infuse so much fun in our chocolate. It's not something serious, but it is a serious experience. We make sculpted chocolate bars that have stories to tell, like, for instance, our Red Riding Hood bar.
Oh, the Red Riding Hood bar is super fun. First, we start with the digital painting on the front, and it tells the first part of the story of Red Riding Hood walking into the woods. And then when you unwrap it, you have this sculpted bar of Big Bad Wolf sitting in Granny's bed. And then you taste it, and the flavor profile wraps up the rest of the story. And so you first, when you bite into it, you taste the earthiness of the chocolate, which is the hunting grounds of the Big Bad Wolf. And then you've got the pasilla chili pepper, which provides sort of the prowl. It's kind of spicy, not quite, but then the guajillo bites you at the end, just like the Big Bad Wolf.
You can find us at www.storyboarddelights.com. Pick out whichever chocolate you want, whichever story you want, and we will ship it right to your door.
Fantastic. I'm going to storyboarddelights.com right now.